Session number 6125, reel 8.
Mr. Hill, tape 8.
One instance that I remember very well, as we arrived at the gates of this new American camp, it was all electrified all the way around. There was quite a paraphernalia of getting us through the gates. We brought with us the 15 boxes containing the ashes of the comrades who we cremated. And there's quite a number of Americans around to welcome us or greet us in. And they saw us arrive with these boxes. And the remarks that we heard were, trust the goddamn Limeys to bring the goddamn Red Cross boxes with them. This kind of hurt us until one of the chaps getting off the truck slipped and the box fell open. They weren't sealed, and of course all the ashes fell out. And of course Americans being Americans couldn't do enough for us after that, and they did their very best to welcome us in to the new surroundings. There were about 80 British all told, I suppose, in the camp, Merchant Navy seamen, some of the gunboat petrol that had been sunk in Shanghai, and us made up the 80. The remainder were Americans, the Peking Legation Guard, who'd been marched into camp with their full quit kit, Wake Island Marines, who had quite a good fight, and American Merchant Navy personnel. We'd brought in with us a couple of second lieutenants from the Royal Scots, a Canadian, French-Canadian RAMC doctor, Major Lynch, Benny Lynch, he was a captain then, Captain Benny Lynch, Sergeant Major Overy of the Middlesex Regiment, who was responsible for the discipline of the British Army. He was a senior warrant officer in the camp, and he was responsible for the discipline. There was a bosun in the Merchant Navy, and they were responsible to the Japanese for the discipline of the British. We were given the job of shell polishing cases, which we refused under instructions from our two Royal Scots officers refused to do. But after being paraded and knocked around by the Japanese, we were told to carry on and polish the shell casings under duress.
How long did you do that for each
day? Well, our main task was building rifle ranges out on Wusang Flats. We didn't know what we were building for a time. We had to take down a graveyard, a Chinese graveyard. We had to take it down a metre and a half. They were two big jobs we had to do. But when the weather was really bad, and it did really get bad up there, because we used to have the Siberian winds used to come. It was wide open to those winds in the months, I suppose, in November and December. When it was really too bad to go out on an outside working party, we used to be marched down to the sheds and given the job of shell polishing. And the amount of times we went simply depended on the weather conditions. The work got progressively harder and harder as the rifle ranges rose in height. They were big butts and they had to be pushed up here 16 or 70 feet up. And of course we were digging ditches all around them, and of course as the ditches sunk and the rifle ranges climbed up, we had the job of pushing up trucks on rails. They put on narrow gauge rails, and we had the job of pushing the trucks from the ditches right the way up. And sometimes we'd have to push up 30 truckloads a day, and then the Japanese would interpreter would decide that they'd sunk the American fleet off the Coral Sea, so they'd have a big front day in memory of your American and British comrades who'd been sunk. So they'd put on another 10 trucks, and we'd perhaps have to push out 40 trucks a day. And, of course, the work became harder and harder, and quite a number of people fell by the wayside. Quite a number of accidents with trucks rolling back. And we derived all sorts of means of trying to ease the burden by putting certain numbers of the men would be on boosters, which would come on certain parts of the push-up to take over and do the actual pushing while they bring the truck back. You'd get on the shovel and shovel it. And as I say, the work got harder and harder, and this went on for some months. Also, one of the jobs that we were given to do was down on the Shanghai Racecourse. The Shanghai Racecourse had been a battleground for fighting between the Japanese and the Chinese, and it was pretty badly knocked around. But we were taken down in trucks. Some of us had no footwear, and riding down on trucks in the winter time, which had steel-bottomed trucks. I remember the wind used to blow underneath the trucks, and we got colder and colder, and it used to be agonising in these trucks, and to get the circulation going when we got from the camp down to the Shanghai Racecourse. And the job we were given there was, first of all, fencing the racecourse in, driving poles in by a Japanese contraption, whereas I think it was three or four men got round to a base plate which had four legs on it, and you swung this up and brought it down over a pole, and this drove the pole in. A very, very effective method of pile driving, actually, but a bit wearying with people who were not getting a great deal to eat. The other job on the race course was burying huge tanks for the purpose of holding neat alcohol. This was what the Japanese run their trucks on. And originally, we buried barrels, and the barrels we did our best to sabotage, not only by the quantities that the Americans drank — they could drink amazing quantities of this stuff, raw alcohol — but we used to undo the bungs and put sand and gravel in and loosen the bungs, which were in turn buried, and in the hopes that quite a number of these were sabotaged. Quite a number of amount of alcohol was taken back to the camp for drinking purposes and for the hospital. But this was soon stopped by the American medical officers. We had three of them in the camp. They were, and we had our own British Major Lynch in there, so we had four medical officers in there. They had to stop this because the Americans were getting so drunk on this wood alcohol that they quickly realised that it would have damaging effects on the liver and the kidneys, so it was stopped as far as the American officers were able to stop it. The senior medical senior officer in the camp was an American, Colonel Ashurst, who fell sadly very far short of the very high standards that were set by Sir Mark Young, who had been in the camp. Mark Young wouldn't give an inch to the Japanese, but Colonel Ashurst always seemed to take the opinion that discretion was a better part of valour, and was quite prepared to go along with anything the Japanese were prepared to call upon the personnel to do.
That, you mean sort of shell polishing and that sort of thing?
Yes, Colonel Ashurst was not a very strong character.
You got into trouble for sabotaging.
Yes, I was picked up with an American top sergeant by the Japanese, and accused of sabotaging a Japanese war effort. It was quite right, and we do. They found that certain bungs that we'd been working on it had been loosened, and they blamed us for it, and we were taken in front of the colonel, a Japanese colonel. Colonel Odira was the Japanese commandant. I think he was in charge of all the prison camps in and around Shanghai. That and the internment camps, because I've read books where his name is mentioned as being in charge of the civilian camps. But I was taken in front with this Japanese, with this American top sergeant, and after a bit of knocking around, were confined for, I think it was a month or 2 months, into a wooden cell, and we had to kneel most of the day, and food was brought over to us once a day. We had no blankets except once every 3 nights, one blanket was given to us. Cigarettes would be smuggled in the bottom of the rice bowl, and if it was a Formosan guard, as most of them were, they may allow us to smoke the cigarette. If not, we chewed it. But after my time in the camp, I went back to the my unit. And Sergeant Palomine was dishing out certain food, and I put my tray up, and he told me to go back to my own unit. I was absolutely unrecognisable because I had a long beard, and I'd lost so much weight. I'd lost more weight than I had when he knew me as going in. However, that was life very much in that camp.
You worked on a graveyard as well, didn't you?
The graveyard we worked on, we took down a metre and a half. That was a very traumatic experience because the Japanese are buried in around a coffin. Smells of cedarwood, I think, if I heard correctly. And the Japanese didn't mind our people opening up the coffins, and they allowed us to use the wood to use on the cookhouse and any fire that the Japanese would allow us to have. We had metal fires, fireplaces in our huts, and at certain times the Japanese would give permission, perhaps one day a week, for us to burn this coffin wood. Certain articles were found in the coffins by the men, bracelets, amulets, rings and that. These were taken and used with a view to perhaps bartering later. We used to...
What were you taking the graveyard down for?
Was it the graveyard was going to be taken down to be used as a field. Agricultural field for us to grow certain of our own vegetables, peanuts. Peanuts were brought in and they were planted around the camp, but they never seemed to obtain maximum growth because they would be used before they ever got to real fruition. But the idea was to take down a graveyard and use it as agricultural, or use it for market garden purposes, I suppose. As the stuff was dug up, shoveled up, it was put in the centre of a mat, a square mat. A pole was threaded through two pieces of tape, and the mat was then lifted up and carried away, and then you filled the next mat. And we quite often came upon snakes, of which I got a horror. And one place where I was digging, could kind of smell snakes, so my particular pal and I handed over the shovels and took up carrying the earth. And on about a second or third return to where we'd been digging, they had found snakes, but being cold weather, they were vipers, or as we know them, adders. But the Japanese used to eat those themselves and allow our people to have the skins, which they used to use to fashion their shoes and are used for belts.
How many hours a day were you working?
Oh, it could be 12, 16 hours a day, from dawn to dusk. Mm-hmm. When we were working on the rifle ranges, we'd work until we'd pushed up the quota that they gave us. Irrespective, it took all night.
And how many meals were you getting?
We were allowed to, we'd have, in the morning we would have just rice, or they did bring us in maize, which no matter how much cooking you did, it got harder. It's just as you feed the chickens. They got a crop. They can function with it, but we couldn't. So, but there was a Red Cross functioning in Shanghai, and the Japanese gave permission for the maize to be taken out to the Red Cross in Shanghai and be ground. It was ground and brought back to us in a kind of a powder, and then it was cooked with water, and then we could eat it. So sometimes we'd have a bowl of that. It would be a good cupful of cornmeal mush, the Americans call it, and we latched on that name because being American Marines, all titles were all Navy titles. I mean, the floor was the deck. The cookhouse was the galley. And, of course, we slipped into the Americanese of calling everything by the Navy terms. We'd go out on this bowl of rice, and we'd get a cup of rice out there. And when we came back, that would be the big meal of the day. Anything that the Americans in their galley could cook up, scrounge from the Japanese, could be hedgerow soup that had been marched out by the Japanese, and things in the hedgerow would be pointed out to them as edible. And they used to pick that. And certain times vegetables used to be brought in. Sweet potatoes, yams, ochre, a plant called ochre. Was it beetroot tops? I think it was beetroot. And sometimes beetroot used to be brought in. And a Chinese water lily. That was a kind of a purple-looking root. And a water chestnut. Meat, never that I can remember. Only on very certain occasions, like the Emperor's birthday, a pig. Or if something might have happened, some sort of holiday function of the Japanese. Once they brought a goat in, a billy goat. If we had a billy goat, that was brought in to fatten up until the Americans let it loose, and it charged into a group of Formosans who were doing their kendo stick drill. It charged amongst those, much to our delight. And the next day, poor Billy's skin hung on the galley's door, and we were allowed a portion of the goat because it caused the Japanese soldiers to lose much face.
And how was the pig divided up that you were given on the Emperor's birthday?
Oh, the best part of the pig, of course. Best part of the pig, that was a greasy pig. Yeah, they allowed in a small pig. And they didn't know how to divide it out, so in consultation with the officers, it was decided that the pig should be greased, and certain members of each we were all divided up into sections. Each section would nominate somebody to try and capture the pig, and whoever caught the pig would have the biggest share of the pig. And this small pig was well and truly greased and let loose, and I was given the unfortunate task of trying to capture the pig for our section. Good God, I've never tried to handle anything so slippery in my life as a slippery pig. I did get it. I thought I had a grip once or twice, but the poor thing died of suffocation. Everybody fell on top of the damn thing. Anyway, it didn't do as much good because the Japanese took it anyhow. So I think we ended up with the skin and a bit of fat. However, it was all shoved in the pot, and it was generally distributed to everyone as such. No Red Cross box. Oh, Red Cross box did appear. A British Red Cross box arrived in the camp, and it was said the British all hoped that it wouldn't contain rice. The British box arrived and was dished out, one between 12 people, and of course in it was a tin of rice. But of course it was creamed rice. I suppose it's the type we know as Ambrosia cream rice these days. It was far, far different to the rice we have in, but the shock of finding rice, even in a pass at 1 between 12, was horrifying, especially having to put up with what the Americans had to say about it.
Were you bummed at all?
We were out on a working party on one occasion when we could hear aircraft approaching. We were in the centre of, I think, of about five aircrafts, but aerodromes, where the Japanese used, we think, for training planes, because there were one or two small cargo planes and fighter planes, and they used to flap around very, very slowly all around us. And occasionally we'd see a fast Japanese, which we understood later to be a Zero plane, go through. But they were mostly training planes. And one day we were out on a working party, not far away from our camp, and we heard a different sound of planes coming in. And looked for them, and presently appeared a whole squadron of American planes. They had the American emblem on. And I suppose there must have been about 20 Japanese planes in the sky. And they shot everyone out of the sky. Every single plane the Americans shot out of the sky. I remember it would be a small bomber plane. And the hatch come open. Bodies came out of it. But that came down in flames. In fact, everything completely shot out. And, of course, the Japanese guards all ran, all started opening. Even NCOs with pistols started firing at these planes. But, of course, we were all paraded. We all got knocked about and all sent back to barracks. We'd been made to lay face downwards. But, of course, human nature being what it was, we did have a look to see what was going on, and we saw all these planes shot down. And we got extra, we called the RAF range Fuji, extra Fuji duty for this, for the Americans coming in and shooting the planes down. And from time to time, as time was going on, we had American pilots brought into us. And we'd always thought that having electrified wire around us, that we were quite safe, and that in accordance with Geneva Convention, outside authorities would be notified where the prison camps were. But the Japanese managed to shoot down some American pilots who were in the fullness of time brought into us. And the most scared people when any air raids were about were these Japanese pilots. And the reason being...
The American pilots.
The American pilots. When we asked them if they knew where we are, they said, hell no, we've got no time to look for barbed wire when we're up there or electrified wire. We're too busy shooting up aerodromes and other planes and Japanese personnel to look. So we know that any American planes coming over, the chances are that they'll open fire on anything that's moving. And when they waggle their wings, which disperses the bullets, look out, because that is... when they're going to start firing.
When did you hear you're going to be moved on?
Well, time went on. Health wasn't too bad in this camp. We had nothing like the terrible outbreaks of diphtheria and dysentery that we had in Shamshi Po. Of the members that we brought in when we joined the American camp, we brought in 15 caskets of cremated bodies. We have brought in one, a British Royal Corps of Signals chap. He died shortly after we came in. That made 16 British were buried in one grave in Shanghai. This 16th kiddie, incidentally, a Signals chap, came from Yarmouth in the Isle of Wight. But I went and saw his mother. After the war, he'd lived very close to me. But after we'd been in there some, I suppose, 9 or 10 months, the Americans had orders to bake hard loaves of bread as we were going on a journey, which was going to be much, much better. It was going to be heaven on earth. Well, the Americans got together and they, the cookhouse, and they baked these loaves of bread. We were paraded and marched to a railway siding and told that we were going to be sent to Japan, to a much nicer prison camp, and where it'd all be fun and games. And we entrained and left Shanghai, and the next place that I remember we called in was Nanking. we detrained and had a wander around Nanking within the limits that the Japanese allowed us. And Nanking was a ghost city. That, of course, had been raped by Nanking, and the majority of the inhabitants had been slaughtered. We entrained and were put into trucks covered in wagons, divided with barbed wire from the entrance either side, 25 on one side, 25 on the other, with three Japanese guards in between the doorways, which were sliding doors. So it was 53 in a truck. In the sides of the truck were big holes, which we were to learn were caused by the American and Chinese Air Force strafing the railway lines running up from Nanking as far as the railway went. We entrained, and if each time there was an air raid on the line, the Japanese locked us in the trucks and got either well away from the train or else scrambled into any shelter that was available. We spent several days in the train going up until we reached Tinsin. We detrained at Tinsin and stayed there for a week in godowns, entrained again and went up to Peking, and we stayed in godowns again for about 6 weeks. Working parties were started, but they entrained us again and took us up to, I think it was Outer Mongolia. And some, one of the things that struck me, the sides of the van was opened and we could see what looked like a lot of nodding figures. And some of the more knowledgeable were able to tell us that they were windmills pumping up salt from the big salt mines, and they were putting them into big salt pans, this salt water which came up as brine, and then in the process of evaporation the salt was gathered. And we continued on the train down into